start up.
They annulled that marriage.
Well,
he probably annulled that marriage.
Yeah, we're learning Kedushin. Actually. So let me just make one comment about the Katan case. I just throw out a suggestion. I don't have any rayas for it. We saw in the Rishonim a lot of different reasons why a Katan may be Pater. You might want to consider whether the Patur Katan could be grounded in Re'ehu. That is Lav Shor Re'ehu, because a Katan is not really a co-equal of the Shor Shel Gadol with Mazik. And the reason for that would be, again, if you think that liability arises out of a framework of social cooperation, then a Katan doesn't really engage in the same kind of consistent, mutually reliant social cooperation that two Gedolim engage in together. And so you might say, for the same reason that a Shor Shel Akum and a Shor Shel Hekdish are Pater, so the Shor Shel Katan may fall into that category. So I think that's like a nice line of reasoning to develop, though we haven't seen anything explicitly in the Makoros that would support that reading. There's nothing in the Makoros against it, but I think the more you build up the Re'ehu theme in Hekdish and Akum, so Katan may fall into that scheme. So it's something to consider. No, you look like you have something to say about that.
Yeah. I agree. I think when I was...
And again, the point is that a Katan's Mufka from that world of social cooperation.
Yeah. I think when we were learning...
you can see the Gemara has that suggestion by Nashim.
Well.
Yeah. I think Gemara has that consideration by Nashim almost when it talks about their Labnei Masu Matan in who. And you might say even the Maskana, when the Gemara accepts it for Nashim, it may not accept it for Katanim, because they're more excluded just practically from engaging in, like, you know, using all these public goods in the same way, or engaging in Mecha Chomemkar in the same way. Okay, that's the one horror from last time. So let's turn to the main event for today, and that's Palgan Izka. So the Gemara in Tesvav Amid Aleph. So you guys were on Tesvav, and this we're concluding the parak. We're not going to really spend time on the Chamisha Tamin stuff. So the Gemara in Tesvav Amid Aleph is commenting on the mission of HaNizak VaHamazik B'Tashlumin. What's a case where both the Nizak and Mazik, they share in the liability? So the Gemara said, now I think that's a very suggestive phrase, that they share in liability. HaNizak VaHamazik B'Tashlumin. And the Gemara says, it's the following. Itmar Palga Nizka Rav Papa Amar Mamona Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua Amar Kanasa. So Chok asks whether Palga Nizka is Kanasa or Mamon. What's the argument that it's Mamon? Rav Papa Amar Stam Shvarim La Bechezka Shimar Kaimen. So your Stam Shor is not domesticated. Uvedin Hu Diblai L'Shlume Kule. Since it's not domesticated, so presumably the owner has a Chi of Shmira. He breached his duty of Shmira if it caused damage, and therefore he has to pay full damages. Rachmana Hu Dechasale Dekati Lo Yoy Ture. But Torah has Rachmanos because his shor has not been demonstrated to be a mu'ad. So that's a reason to limit his liability to half damages. In principle, he's chayav full, he breached his duty. But because he didn't egregiously breach his duty, we limit his liability at half. That's the Palga Nizka Mamona or a pup of you. Rav Huna disagrees. Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yehoshua Amar Knasa, Stam Shvarim b'Chezka Shimar Kaimi. Your Stam Shor is domesticated. Because of that, Bidin Hu D'lo L'Shalim Klal. So if it caused damage, you didn't breach your duty, because you're within your rights not to exercise Shmira. But even though you didn't breach your duty, Rachmana Hu Dekanse Ki Hechi D'lo Natre Ture. But the Torah imposes a special Knas, so you might say, to give you artificial reasons for engaging in Shmira, namely to avoid the Knas. So you didn't breach your duty to the Nizak, you're fully within your rights not to exercise Shmira, but the Torah wants to incentivize you to be Shomer, so it imposes a penalty of Chatzi Nezek. All right? That's the 2 days in the Gemara. Now, Isaac has something to say, or? Okay. So you can see Rashi, your comments on La Bechezka Shimor. Sheregilin Benegicha Tzrichin Shmira. That the argument for Palga Nizka Mamona is that the Shor Tam, a Shor Tam is Rogil Benegicha, and it needs Shmira. So the question that this raises is, well, why then should you get a reduction for 50% if it's Rogil Benezek? Right, what does this mean that chasale brachmanu de chasale dakati lo yoy ture? On the assumption that palgan is kaz mamona, so a shor is rugil benegicha and needs shmira, so you should pay nezek shalim. What's the 50% reduction? So what do you think?
Is there a pasuk for this exemption for brachmanu de chasale?
Nope. I mean, just the fact that the Torah says half damages, right? So, I mean, what's it about? Leah, do you have a theory?
No, I'm not sure your question. Your question is, what happens if you're dealing with a gicha but still be short time?
Well, no, I mean, a short time, he's saying, is rugged ben a gicha. That's what it means.
That's why the...
I'm not going to be regular ben a gicha, it's rich mirror, but I had to go yahi to read.
Right. I mean, why is the Torah chas on you? You breached your duty, right? So, how do you make sense of this?
Can't be like a percentage thing.
Oh.
Short rods are a higher percentage of because of short times, so we're not going to hold the person like responsible to the same extent.
Yeah, so I think it's something in that line of reasoning. I think it's the idea here. Notice the Gemara, the subject of discussion here is about Stam Shvarim, right? So, what is the average shore's characteristic? Or what's the average shore's normal behavior? But that doesn't tell us anything about the shore that you possess. So the machlokas here is, on average, what's the nature of a shore? Is it b'cheskas shimur or la b'cheskas shimur? It seems like that's not sufficient to establish, or it seems like even if that's sufficient to establish that you breached your duty, it's different from a case where you know that your animal is violent and you breach your duty by not being shomer in that case. So if it's just a statistical average that a stam shor is la b'cheska shimor, you might say that creates a weak chiyuv shmira, the violation of which is sufficient to generate mamon shalem, but it's not so bad, right? Because you didn't know that your shore requires shmira. You just know that on average a shore requires it. That's conceptually distinct from a case where you know that your shore is a bad shore and it's violent, it requires shmira, and you breach your duty. So you might say that one of them creates, stam shvarim la b'cheska shimor, creates a very generic duty to exercise shmira. But once it's yoy ture, it generates a specific duty with respect to this shore. Now, on the assumption of Palganiska Mamona, both of those equally generate a chiyuv nezek shalem, tashlumin for the full value of damages. But there's a difference in whether we could consider giving you a reduction for 50%. Now, still, why would you give the reduction in a case where you just violate a generic duty? So here it might be helpful, just that we saw some echoes of this. So, remember we saw the idea of the Nemuka Yosef in the last sugya, where he thought that you're not going to be memana and apotropis over the ketanim themselves, because if you were to do that, the ketanim would lose all their assets, right? Because they engage in so much tortious activity of their own, that if you were to hold them liable for every maisa nezek, then yichalu kol nechasav. So I wonder if there's some analogous consideration over here, that when it comes to just breaching a generic duty, yes, in principle it should give rise to chiyuv nezek shalem, there's some external consideration of chas v'achmana le'dakati lo yoyture, which gives us some discretion to give a discount, to offer a discount. So maybe it's just would be too onerous if you were held liable all the time for those kinds of nezikim. So it would sound like there may be some mitigating consideration. What do you guys think?
It doesn't really relate to the nature of a weak chiyuv. That relates more to the nature of the chiyuv itself.
Correct, but the reason why we could distinguish between stam shvarim la b'cheska shimor nakati lo yoyture is because there's a different basis for liability. Right? So min haTorah, each of those is sufficient to generate nezek shalem, but one of them can easily be offset by mitigating consideration if it's just a generic duty of la b'cheska shimor. But the breach of duty for Akati, for Yoyid Ture, once it's a Shor Muad, that we're not going to offset with some mitigating consideration. You see that?
You might also compare it to like what we saw for with like the concurrent Yona. Like the exposure to risk should like might have been liability, like might have been basis to hold him liable for like the damage that he could have done.
Yeah.
But like in the end, we just hold him liable for like what he actually did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more specific.
Right.
Is that different from the distinction between a generic duty and a specific duty?
No, I don't think they're understanding.
It's a way of persistifying it.
I feel like it's like somewhat parallel to this.
Meaning, like, how certain is the risks that you're exposing other people to? Yeah, that's also a good way of putting it. Okay, but the main takeaway I want from Palgan Iskamamona is that even within breach of duty, it sounds like there are two different kinds of breach of duty. And you see that clearly from the Gemara's suggestion within Lo Yai Ture versus Stam Shvarim La B'chaz Kashim Ar Kayamin. So I'm just making two harvests here. The first is that the way to resolve the tension is the chilek between this shore versus Stam Shvarim. And the second point is that Stam Shvarim is a generic duty versus Yai Ture is a specific. Yeah, how does that sound?
Sounds good.
Sounds good?
Sounds good.
Okay. And that's how you make sense of this Rashi, that Stam Shvarim La B'chaz Kashim, or just Regilim B'Negicha, means generically about Stam Shvarim. Okay. Now, of course, the other tzad, Apalga Niska Knasa, is also very interesting, because here it means, as we pointed out, there's no breach of duty, so we think there's no moral basis for liability, and yet we slap on obligation to pay as a deterrent. Right? And this is the binyan av for all the deterrent-based liabilities. So let me just quickly point out that we've seen there seems to be different examples of liabilities that arise from knasos. So let me just say I had a... Yeah. So, you remember earlier in the year we saw Tosos Rid talk about a knas. Remember this Tosos Rid's knas that he read into the Sigya? I think on Mem Hei. You may remember the Mishnah of whether you require Shmir Ma'alya versus Shmir Ma'ula versus Shmir Pusa for a short time versus Muad. And it's Shitas Rabbi Lazar that Ein Lo Shmira El Asakin, and Machlokes Rishonim, whether within Rabbi Lazar of Ein Lo Shmira El Asakin for a Muad, does that generate a Chiyuv Tashlumin or just a Chiyuv Lasalik Hezeka, Midr of Nasan? Does that sound familiar? So Tosus Rid thought that there was a Machlokes in the Gemara about whether or not Ein Lo Shmira El Asakin generates a Chiyuv Tashlumin. Meikar Adin, or whether it's just Bitoras Knas. He thought that when the Gemara says that Ein Lo Shmira L'Zaken is Mechayev Midrav Nasan, it generates a Chiyuv to pay, but only a Chiyuv to pay Bitoras Knas for violating the injunction of Rav Nasan. Whereas the other day in the Gemara held that Ein Lo Shmira L'Zaken generates a liability Meikar Adin Bitoras Mamon. So it just seems, on the face of it, that kind of knas that Tosus Rid is referring about for violating Rav Nasan's, you know, al yishah has sulam ru'ua b'soch beso or kelav ra b'soch beso, that's punitive. We're actually punishing you for not complying with Rav Nasan's injunction, right? Because you kept it around when you weren't supposed to, we punish you for doing so. The knas in our Gemara is different, or it seems to be different. Our knas seems to be deterrent-based. We impose knas on the back end to incentivize you to exercise shmira on the front end. Whereas in that Tosus Rid, it sounds like the knas is really just it's really just post facto. It's a knas for violating, for doing a wrong by breaching Rav Nasan's injunction. Does that sound right, Isaac? Right, I knew, because you think all penalties are just there to create incentives.
So meaningless. I'm saying, like, why can't a punitive thing be prevented? Like,
so they may also be... So you may want to... So like you see in our case, that's... I guess I just wouldn't use, like...
The same thing here. You punish the guy for not having a shmiro, so that next time he'll do shmiro. Or so that he knows that had he not a shmiro, he would get punished.
So when you read that Tosfos Rit, it seems clear that the language is all just it's retrospective. It's like
my issue is not with like I think my issue is that like that distinction seems meaningless to me. Punitive and preventative.
Anybody wanna help Isaac out? I mean to be charitable, I think I could see where they may converge. Right? You might think that the reasons for certain punishments is so that they could serve as deterrents. But I don't agree that it would be meaningless. I mean, clearly you could see, like, you penalize somebody for doing a wrong versus just creating an artificial monetary incentive for behaving a certain way.
For
fine. So
if you do something 10 wrong, so it just does something 10 wrong to you.
Okay, I guess I would say that for monetary issues, I don't see, punitive.
What do you mean? All cases of paganiska, of all cases of mammon tashlumin, seem to be like considerations of justice, like the undo the wrong that was committed, right? So that's a kind of punishment or it's a kind of compensation that's not there as just a deterrent. And the idea here is that even within knassos, our son knassos, they're there to penalize you for acting wrongly. That's like giving him a patch. You're saying all patches are there to deter the behavior. That's what you're saying. But I just don't see any grounds for it. You want to pull up, anybody want to pull up that language of that formulation of Tosfos Rit from the Ein Lo Shmira Ela Sakin? It's in the Shmira, it's in the Ramada Shmira Sugya. So if you can pull it up, we'll take a look at the language. Let me just give another example. So we had another Knas that was clearly deterrent based. So that works in nicely with our Sugya, not like that Tosfos Rit Knas on Memhei. So that's the knas that we saw in the Rabbeinu Yonah son of the Shituk of Etzes, about a shor shel akum, shehizik shor shel Yisrael, is mishali nezek shalim. Because the akum doesn't treat the mammon Yisrael with proper respect, so the Torah knasses him to pay nezek shalim even for a short time to incentivize him to exercise greater shmira. That's a knas that's very much in line with the knas in Arsugya here on Tesvav. We've seen a third, we saw a fourth knas. So number Hezek Sheino Nikar was Machlokas in the Gemara and Gidin, whether it's a maker, a din, it's a chiv mamon, or whether it's a betoras knas. What was your impression of the Hezek Sheino Nikar? What?
Why is the Shorshal Akum prohibitive?
Because the Shino Kavetza says that it was there, because the non-Jew doesn't treat the Jew's property with proper respect, so we have to impose a chi of nezek shalem so that they'll exercise greater shmira and restrict their shor from harming Jewish property. So it's clear that it was there to incentivize better behavior. That's consistent with the knas in Arsegya. Isaac, a deterrent based. What about Hezek Sheino Nikar? I think the language of the Gemara in Gittin was that Hezek Sheino Nikar is lav shmei Hezek, but Chazal imposed a knas, kidei shelo yelech kol echad v'yazik mamon chavero, v'yitame taros shel chavero. Right, so there also it sounded like it was a deterrent-based knas. That was my sense from the Gemara and Gittin. So my point here is just that, yes, it seems like we have at least three applications of the kind of knas that we have on Tesvav to deter people. That's the case of Hezek Sheino Nikar and the case, at least according to Rabbeinu Yonasan, of Shor Shel Akum Shehizik Shor Shel Yisrael. But we also have this other kind of knas, like we find in Tosfos Rit on Memhei, which is more of a punitive. It's just more punitive. No, are you able to pull up the language of Tosfos Rit?
No.
All right, fine. Well, we could look it up later, right? That was... It was in the standard of Shmira.
Okay.
Ramana Shmira. Leah, do you have it up? You can pull it up or not? So. All right, so well, we don't have to look at it now then. Let me just point out for the conceptual parallel, we also have cases in the Gemara where
in principle, somebody should be chayav to pay, but we take away liability in order to incentivize people to engage in this kind of behavior. Does anybody know where we find an example of that?
Loans.
What?
Loans.
So within a zikin.
So it's meager, I think you should be chayav to pay nezek shalem, but we actually take away liability so that a person won't be deterred from engaging in these kinds of behavior.
Oh, no.
So it's in the Zikin.
Let me say that by regal, by...
It's a good trivia question.
So we say it in the case of someone is rodef achar chavero, to hurt him. So if the nirdaf destroys somebody's kalim while running away from the rodef, he's chayv to pay nezek shalem. Because matzil atzol lom chavero is chayv. The same is true me'ikra din for a third party. So if Noah is pursuing Isaac, and I break someone's property while I'm trying to stop Noah from doing so, meager adin I'm chayav to pay, but Chazal took away liability so that people won't be deterred from saving a nirdaf miyad rodef. So it's just interesting there. It's conceptual opposite case. Right? In these cases, like on Tesvav, we're imposing liability to deter people from acting a certain way. And in that case, we actually we take away liability in order to not deter people from acting a certain way. Right? So we're overriding the chiyuv mamon aspect of tashlumin in order to incentivize certain behaviors.
For the record, super hard to find this system.
Yeah, really hard.
Really?
Yeah.
So are you in the Ramat HaShmira file?
He made it up.
Do you have the file open?
No, I was looking at
Bar-Ilan.
I
don't know if
it's the Ramat
HaShmira
file.
Yeah, just pull open the Ramat
HaShmira
file.
It's Ramat
HaShmira,
it's not
Shmira
Ben
Ezekin. That's
there you go.
It's a big file. It's like, and then just search Tosas Rid. You'll see the Tosas Rid on Memhei. I think it's Memhei.
There's a date though, you made it up.
I just typed it in.
Straros Rishus Harabin, right? But isn't that
No, Shtar, I think it's a bit of a machovic. I think we standard view that as pater. Because it's told of rego.
What's
Chatzin Ezek
that's not
bad? Chatzin Ezek but it's only Brishus Hanizak.
Oh, Brishus Hanizak. Oh, okay, so never mind.
Because it's rego.
Yeah.
Leah, did you pull open the file?
I'm trying to. Not very good. What do you think the name of the share was?
Shmira. Yeah. No, you can't just search the file for Tosas Rid.
I am. You hear a lot of Tosas Rid on that.
I'm M. Hey.
I don't know, maybe.
Read Machlokas and Shir about the right reading of Tosas Rid. Not about this part, but.
No, yeah.
That was Baya and Rava. Isaac got very angry about it.
I did. It was super not as warm.
Well?
Super not as
warm. Right, so Stama Isaac is Becheskas. I would think it's probably Memvav. Because that's where Reb Nosson appears. Find it, Noah?
Yeah.
Isaac, you found it?
Yeah.
So what's the formulation about the Knas? Wait, so make our day in the Shri Potter because you're Shomer Karai. Oh, there you go. So read that phrase again. Kansinam lay al da avar bin azikin. Say it again. Kansinam lay. So notice, right? Kansinam lay l'schai bin azikin mishum da avar al dvar Torah. It sounds very much retrospective. We're punishing because he violated the Torah's command of Rav Nasan. Aval Yishaya Sulam Rabbisof Beso. No? I think it's very different from the Gemara's idea on Tesvav, which is Kansinale Kidei Dilinatre Lature, which is very much prospective, so that he'll exercise the right kind of Shmira. Maskim Isaac, just in the formulation? What?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I was getting at. Okay. So that's just the main ideas of Palganiska Mamona and Palganiska Kanasa. There's a bit of a side question here that it's kedai to raise very briefly, and that is
the phenomenon of short time mishale migufo, is that also part of the knas? Or is that also related to Palganiska Kanasa / Palganiska Mamona? I mean, because we know there are two differences between the Tam and Muad. One is Palganiska, and the second one is Migufo. So the question is the Migufo part, let's say it's on one side, is that because Palganiska is a Knas? And I guess on the Palganiska Mamona side, is that because Chasale Rachmana Dakati Lo Yai Ture? So do any of you have thoughts on this? Whether the Migufo part is related to the Palganiska part? So I think I think there's something to say two separate things on the Knas side. So let me just point out the language of the Meiri on Tesvav is, I think it's somewhat ambiguous, but it leans more into connecting the Palganiska with the Knas part with the Migufa part. Chatzin Ezek Amor Bekeren Min Adin Lo Yechai B'Tashlumin Shashur Hashvarim Bechezka Shimor Heim. Ela knasu shekonsa Torah kadesha yarbe b'shmira shoro, ve'eno mishtalem ela migufo. Aval nezek shalem shebemua din gomer hu velo knasu mishtalem in aliyah. So that, I think the contrast in this formulation of the Meiri implies that mishtalem migufo is part of knasu. What do you mean? Do you agree with that reading? Donnie, you like it?
I think it sounds like he's putting them together. Like they're right. I mean, that's how we paskin.
Right.
So on Palganiska Kanasa. But why does he throw in? Why does he throw in Michelle and Migufo here? So you think his real point here is just about the features of Tam versus Muad?
Yeah.
And Mishal Mil El Migufo is...
That's a pretty salient difference
between
Tam and
Muad. Yeah.
Definitely worth mentioning.
Yeah.
It's obviously what's going on.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. It seems like they have stronger
reading. And he's just bringing out two differences, whether A... Knas versus Mamon and B, Migufa versus Aliyah.
Yeah.
But you don't think that the Migufa part is related to the Knas part?
No, just describing the different distinguishes.
What do you think, Noah?
Yeah, I'm not
that. You're on their side? Just Donnie and me on my side? This guy's three against three. It's three against three. Donnie and me on my side and three of you on your side.
Donnie,
right. Very good. Donnie, you're staying on my side, or you're?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Kind of strange. I mean, why would it? It's kind of strange that the Migufo part wouldn't be related to the Palganiska part, right? What's the difference between
it's related to the time. On your logic, shouldn't you say that?
But the time part is so bound up with the explanation for Palganiska, right? Palganiska is supposed to say, what's the difference between the time and Muad? The difference is that is it Bechezka Shimor or La Bechezka Shimor?
On your bad read, wouldn't you say that a short time
No, because they'll say also a Torah Chasa Alav.
You say Torah Chasa Alav for maybe Shani Lufar. I'm just saying.
I know. You, of course, you'll say you'll still.
I'm just saying on your read that like he's saying that in Shani Lufar is like is a din in is a din Chasa. So the same thing for the next line. was that Tom and who was Nisgal Shai by the Kofar Kofar Shalim? If Tom was Nisgal and Abad, then
Kofar Klal, if it was Chatzikov, right?
Right. And that's the thing in Chatzin as a Knossa, because he's talking about Chatzin as a Knossa versus Chatzin as a Mamona. Like, you're reading this as like a distinction between Chatzin as a Knossa and Chatzin as a Mamona. Not as a contrast between Tom and Muad.
No, I am reading this as a distinction between Tom and Muad, but both of those are related to the explanation of Knasu Shekonsa Torah. That's like the salient difference between Tom and Muad. That one is really big.
The same thing. There'd be co-fair. There's no reason
for that. No, I think the Meiri would agree that. I think the Meiri would agree that, of course, the Mandamar Mamona, who they would have an explanation for Mishalei Migufo being related to Achasa Rachmana Alei. Let me just make that point explicitly. Remember this Yamshel Shlomo that we saw in the last Sugya of Katan, Shorshel Katan Shehizik? So we said, we saw there was a view in the Gemara that Ein Mamidin Apotropis L'Shor Tam. So, the Yamshel Shlomo said, the reason is kiven the chas rachmana atam the ein mishalim el chatzin nezek, the af also hachetzi ein mishalim el migufo. Hilchach gabi yasmi merachman aleihem. So his argument was that we see that there the Torah limits liability to paganism, and even more it limits it to migufo. So those are trying to show like the extent to which the Torah is makil when it comes to a short time. And this is, that's why we're going to be makil even further when it comes to Yisomim. So my point is that he sees short time Mishalei Migufo as being consistent with the kula of only paying Chatzi Nezek. So those aren't two separate conceptual points. They're mutually reinforcing points, right, that get at a single idea. That there's like a fundamental kula when it comes to a shor tam. So I thought the Meiri was making a similar point. Look, it's only a knas, and part of it only being a knas is that it's limited to migufo. Donnie, you're back on my side.
I never left.
All right. So I mean, that's at least if you don't think that's pshat in the Meiri, certainly it seems to be a very plausible explanation for shor tam being limited to migufo. That because it's only a knas, so you have no liability from your general assets, your maximum liability is not just capped at 50% of the damages, it's capped at the lesser of 50% of the damages or the full value of the shor mazik. All right, so you say it's part of the kula of it being a knas. And if you were to hold palga niska mamona, then it's part of the kula of akati lo yai ture. But I do want to make the observation that it's possible to argue to the contrary, that the fact that it's a knas doesn't lead to more kulas, but it may inject a dimension of chumrah. The reason for thinking this is, you'll recall in the Katan Sugya, we saw the point of the Shita Mekubetzes and the Ravid, both of whom contended that when it comes to Yisomim, we're not going to take away a short tam from their estate. Why? Anybody remember the Ravid and the Shimon Wetz's argument? Ein mamidin apotropis liyasmi b'tam, because short tam is mishalim migufo, and therefore, yes, right, it would be too severe a punishment to take away a davar mesuyim from them. Something that clearly generates profits for their estate, right? It's their cow that they could rent out. It's their cow that they use for plowing. And so, since it's like a profit-driving asset, it would be too draconian to deprive the Yisomim of it. So you might say that because Palga Niska is a Knasa, you're Mishalei Migufo Lahachmir on the Yisom to create a greater deterrence in a general case, it's Mishalei Migufo to create a greater deterrence that somebody won't let their shore cause damage, because they know they'll be deprived of this productive asset.
They can pay for whatever you want.
Well,
any pay for whatever you want.
No, not if you hold yufal out of shore. Right, that's the point. Shore tam ashan hufo means that you forfeit at least a share of the asset to the nisa. Right, so that's why it's like actually a chumrah if you think that there's something. There's a fundamental desire that a person has not to lose possession of their productive assets. So you might say that's part of the deterrent features of the knas. Tell me.
Could the Ravid's case be really limited to the Sonin? Like that, meaning it's not an inherent Gomra
right.
Gufo, but it's by Yisomim, it's they're not going to get a profit off of a land, but from a shore, it's easy to get.
I think they are getting profit off their land, but it's like through their shore plowing their land.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's like the this is the thing that does all the work for them. So it's
what I'm saying. Yeah, so fine. So but saying that that's only for Yisomim though. That's like
because it's harder for them to buy a new one.
Yeah, or saying that it's
it
just,
is possible.
Yeah.
Like with respect to Yisomim, there's a preference for keeping your productive assets.
Yeah, so then it doesn't reflect.
Correct. Then it would undercut this argument.
Wait, why did I undercut the argument?
Because he's saying for a general person, it's not a big deal to lose a productive asset. You just buy a new one. Right? But for a yasam, it's much more complicated, or they have to live off this. Or,
yeah. Or like how you were explaining the Ravid before, it's like this is the thing we could point to that they make money off of.
Right.
So
why not say that for anybody, right? I mean, if I'm an Uber driver, right, and my car is what generates profits for me. So to confiscate my car would be like a severe punishment.
But I'm
saying maybe that's goofing the point. That because Palganiska's Knasa, yes, you get a discount in the amount, but there's like a special psychological deterrent through knowing that like, oh my gosh, if I don't drive carefully, my car is going to be taken away.
Maybe it's like, this is too psychological, but you sell them, it's like, for kids, like you can only see, like you can't see that far in the future.
Right. So this is the right. You can't.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, fine. Right. But like, what you don't have a case.
The thing is, usually they have an apotropist who's overseeing their estate, so maybe it's a little different. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe that mitigates the difference.
Okay, but I was trying to limit it.
Right, but it's like if you drive under the influence, they take they impound your car, so it's meant to be like a real deterrent.
Yeah.
And so the same thing here. The Mishalim Migufo is. It's not to limit liability, but it's more to add a level of deterrent that you're going to lose this asset, right? Which maybe psychologically creates a greater deterrent, which is in line with Palganiska Knasa. All right, any comments on that? I think that's like a very nice suggestion. Isaac, what do you think? Yeah. Okay, so that's so much for the general issue of Palganiska Mona, Palganiska Knasa, and maybe how Mishalim Migufo relates to that broader question. So now I want to dive into the further question about to what extent Palganiska Knasa functions as a Knas, as opposed to having some features of Mamon. That's one way of looking at the analysis up ahead. Alternatively, to what extent something that really arises as a deterrent can be collected against the rules of Ein Dan in Dine Knasos. So, I mean, even if we're not going to judge Dine Knasos, maybe because this knas is there to deter the behavior of a mazik, so there are special reasons why we have to enforce it or allow part of it to go ahead, even though generally we wouldn't adjudicate the next knas also. Yeah. So what we're about to see is that we have a general rule, ain't done a dine knasos. But we'll see, look, some exceptions that seem to allow collections of palganiska knasos to go through against that general rule. The question is, why is that? So one possible way of understanding the exception is that this knas has features of mamon in it. I think that's like the way my father usually understands some of the mikoros. That this, even though it's palganiska knasa, that has elements of a chiyuv mamon. I'm going to suggest slightly differently that because this knas is there to deter certain kinds of behavior, so we are going to allow a form of gevia to go through, even though generally we don't allow dna knasos to go through.
You're just an explanation of like the formalistic phenomenon that it's elements of mammon there?
No, because it has nothing to do with it being elements of mammon. It has no element of mammon. It's rather because the deterrent should still be in place.
What does elements of mammon mean?
Elements of mammon is that it's really compensatory. That the nizak lost property, and so that consideration for the nizak's loss makes palga nizka more of a restoration of the nizak's damage, as opposed to like some objective knas that's not corresponding to an actual loss. Put in more formalistic terms, so my father will say usually that a knas is something that is beyond the keren. Right? That's how the Gemara usually characterizes knasos. Kefel, dalet v'hei, that's a knas. But here, because it's compensatory for the actual damages, it has aspects of a chiyuv mamon which can be collected. Isaac.
So you're saying that it's a complete base, it's a complete knas, but it's current base of the high knasos?
Yeah. Now, let me just flesh out the problem with saying, well, look at this first makar, and then I'll say why. The problem with seeing it as a quasi-mamon knas. Liad.
When it comes to what you were saying about how since
it's deterrent,
incentive-based deterrent, shouldn't that then be the case for all types of knasos?
Yes, maybe it will be.
Okay.
Well, at least all knasos that are incentive-based.
Are we going to see examples of other incentive-based knasos that...
So I don't have such strong views about, like, you know, I don't know, is Kefel Dalet and Hay, is that incentive-based? I have no reason for thinking so.
My point is just that, like, if you're going to rely your explanation on, well, this knas is different from other knasos, that's like going to end up being a very arbitrary question when you look at the reason for most knasos. Is this really an incentive-based knas or not something else? So, like,
right.
It makes the whole answer much weaker.
Right. But I'm going to assume that my sense, wherever it's worth, is that this knas is unique in being deterrent-based. And like Kefel Dalet V'hei is more punitive for like the egregiousness. Look, you even get that in the Gemara. The Gemara explains. So here's my Rav Alachas attempt to do that work. Is that the Gemara even explains the difference between, you know, you pay Kefel because a Ghana like acts more egregiously by sneaking into someone's basement, right? Well, he's only afraid of humans, but he's not afraid of the Bon Shalom.
Yeah,
that's not a deterrent based reason. That's a it's like, oh, the crime is worse, and therefore we're going to impose a severe punishment.
Yeah, but my point more is like Popper wouldn't find this very scientific. Like,
who?
Popper wouldn't find it very scientific. Whatever you're going to be posed the knas that we don't practice anymore, you're just going to think to yourself, oh, what's the reason that this one is less incentive based than other knasos?
Well, I think
it's not like a meaningful distinction to say, well, this is an incentive based.
Well, I'm contending that the other knasos are not incentive based, right?
Well, like you just said, that some of them though also are able to persist and some knasos.
Well, we'll talk about the other. Well, right now, all I'm interested in doing right now is showing there's a difference between the dinim of Paganiska knasa in contrast to other knasos. And I'm suggesting that that's due to the fact that this is more of a incentive-based knas rather than a punitive-based knas.
Okay.
All right. Let's just see what the analysis brings. So the Meiri on Tesvav Mabes quotes the Ravid, or at least he quotes a lot of Mefarshim quoting the Ravid. Harbi Kasu Hashem Gila Mefarshim. That, well, in general, for every other knas, we say that modeh b'knas is pater. Right, that's the din. Asher yarshiyun elokim, prat l'marshiya es atzmo. That if you're modeh b'knas, you're pater. Whereas in mamon, modeh b'mamon is chayiv. Hadas baldin k'me edem dami. So the Iri quotes a lot of Rishonim quoting the Ravid that rule doesn't apply to Palganiska Knasa. That Modeh Bipalganiska Knasa would be Chayiv, even though Modeh Biknas is Pater. Harbe kasu b'shem gedolei mefarshim b'sof parak shlishi shechati nezak shel tam mishtalim al pi hodaso hoil v'keren hu v'ein odoma l'shar knasos. Okay. So,
what do you make of that formulation, hoil v'keren hu? So, yeah, so my father's reading is that it's because it's a kind of mammon, meaning it's compensatory for damages, and that's why it functions more as mammon rather than knas. I think that formulation does support that reading. Let me tell you what the problem with it is, but I'll give you a chance to... Donnie, what do you think the problem is? Put it differently. What is the problem with that?
How can you have something? How can you have a paganiska moment, paganiska knasa, and then when it comes to paganiska knasa, the Miri's like, oh, but actually this has a moment element to it.
Okay.
Kind of like
put it more.
Get rid of the distinction between the two.
Well, it's supposed to narrow the gap between them. Right? So my father's reading is supposed to say, well, you know, the Gemara is not about. Is it mammon all the way over here in the east, or is it knas all the way over here in the west? It's Gemara is trying to say, well, you know, how much mammon, how much knas is it? But it acknowledges that there are shades of both in there. I think the problem is that, at least in the way the Gemara sets it up, it sounds like on the assumption of palganiska knasa, so stam shuar mar b'chezka shimor. So you have no duty of shmira. You didn't breach your duty. So there are no compensatory damages that are owed. You've done no wrong. So keren, if it means a duty to compensate for the principal damages, that's non-existent in a case where you're not at fault. You have no duty of compensate. And if it just means the mazik's physical losses, well, that's not a relevant halachic category because the mazik's not liable for those losses. Right? Hoil v'kerenu. What does keren mean? Yes, the mazik suffered a loss that's commensurate to this amount, but that's not the mazik's... the nizak suffered a loss commensurate to this amount, but that's not the mazik's obligation. So it's not keren in a liability sense. Right? So the mere fact that he suffered a loss that's corresponding to the amount that the Torah obligates me to pay doesn't mean it's keren in the halachic sense. It's just a coincidence. If you want to talk about mammon means an amount that the mazik is liable to restore for principal damages that he's responsible for. Right? Well... What do you mean? But he's not responsible for that.
Well, the Torah makes him responsible.
Only as a deterrent. Right? So if Palganiska Knasa is Kidei Lenatre Es Ture, not that there's some moral responsibility for the scope of damages incurred, then it's not correct to call it Karen in the Mammon sense.
Aren't you just assuming your premise and saying there's no way to read it not that way? You're just assuming that the point here is that it's a deterrent. Why are you assuming, if it's a deterrent, therefore it makes no sense to say it's carried? The whole other side is not a deterrent.
Right. I think you're right. You could respond by saying that on this view, so palga niska kinasa mamonahu means that there's got to be some real moral responsibility.
Yeah.
Right? Not just that it's mamon in the sense that it's equal to the scope of damages, right? But almost to read the Gemara as saying that Stam Shvarim are Bechezka Shimor, we don't have any idea about this shore, whether it is,
yeah.
So maybe there is some moral accountability for the Nezek caused by this shore. Kind of making the opposite move that we made within Palganiska Mamona, why is the Torah Chasale, right? Because we don't know anything about this shore. So you say the same thing for Palganiska Knasa. Maybe there is real mammonist liability here. We just don't know whether this shore required shmir or not, so we limit your liability to just the Knasa deterrent, right? So I think that's right. I think that is the way to defend this reading. But not on the grounds that it's keren, meaning the damages falls within the scope, the compensation falls within the scope of damages suffered. That's not the reason why it's mamon. The reason why it's mamon is because maybe stam shorim b'cheska shimor doesn't tell you anything about this particular shor, and so maybe there is some moral responsibility for the nezek that your shor causes. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't get that distinction.
So typically, when you talk about is it mamon or is it knas, the question is a formal question as to whether or not the compensation is commensurate to the damages suffered. If it's commensurate, then it's mamon. If it's incommensurate, then it's knas. That's usually the standard, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying that can't make sense in the Meiri's formulation here, because commensurate, incommensurate is a function of responsibility, right? I mean, if there were damages that's not the mazik's fault, then that's not going to turn it into karen, right? So maybe one way of reading this Meiri is to say he's making a fundamental claim about stam shvarim b'cheska shimor, and the Gemara doesn't mean that we're imposing liability just as a deterrent, but maybe there are shades of moral accountability here, because maybe this shore itself was a wild shore, not falling within the scope of b'cheska shimor, which makes you liable for mamonis. So it's just like a more fundamental read as to why it would be karen. So that's, I think that is a way of defending that. I think Liad's right that there is a way of defending this interpretation of the Ravid as contending that Palganiska Knasa has shades of mamonis. I think another way of reading that phrase, not as compelling with the words, is just that he's saying, hold the Karen Zubayim Domo Lashar Knossos, meaning it's not punitive. A punitive knas usually goes beyond the normal scope of liability, but this one is not trying to be punitive. It's not trying to impose some sort of excessive amount on the mazik. It serves some other function. So maybe you could read the Karen versus non-Karen distinction as tracking a distinction between punitive versus deterrent-based.
Well, weren't you saying the difference between Mamon and Knas is punitive versus deterrent? So how within Knas itself is there also...
No, Mamon and Knas is not punitive versus deterrent.
That's what you were
deterrent.
Saying. Well, that's what Isaac was arguing about. You're saying, even Mamon are like justice and punishment.
But that's not punitive. That's compensatory.
Okay, so define your character. So what does that mean, that a punitive knas that's also not like a CFB card? So why are you...
So one example we gave was from the Tosfos Rid on violating of Nasan. For violating of Nasan...
Why?
That's a deterrent, because you didn't listen to Rav Nasan.
No, it's not a deterrent. That's a punishment for violating Rav Nasan. Right? Hol v'avar al masha asar Torah.
Okay, I see. Yeah, but that's like a very specific example. It's hard to imagine other knasos in that very specific sense. That would be saying, oh, well, this is different because it's not a punitive knas of all other knasos.
Right.
Right, doesn't it seem so strange?
What about kefel? Kefel, you say, is punitive. And this is here. You might say that to put it in a weaker way, he's just trying to show that there is some important difference between this knas and other knasos, right? There's a difference.
Explain how Karen is emblematic of that difference. Well, Karen.
Yeah, and that needs to be explained on my position.
Yeah, you just explained how like it's possible to read this and not say what your father said. You haven't really given a reason for
right.
What you're saying.
Right. This is not. This line is not what's supposed to motivate my view.
Yeah.
This line is what motivates his view, and I'm saying we're not forced into that view. And also that it raises tricky questions about what exactly Karen means if it's not something that you're morally accountable for.
That's not true, but to say that Karen in any way indicates towards your view, I think is really
strange. Well, on the assumption that...
you have your view.
Well, on the assumption that a punitive knas would be greater than the scope of the principle.
There's no reason to think that's what it's asking.
Just because it's Karen versus non-Karen.
Yeah, that's what it's
okay. But he's saying eno domo l'shar knasos, which is important, right? He's saying there's something special about this knas.
So it's pick your unique attribute of Karen.
Right.
No reason to pick yours.
Correct. Correct. Now, Isaac, you have a question? So the Meiri is very upset with this reading of the Ravid. He says, that can't be, because if you read our Gemara seems to suggest very clearly that moda b'knas for palganiska knasa would be pater. So if you read the Gemara in Tesvav, the Gemara seems to suggest that as one of the nafkamina between palganiska knasa and palganiska moda. So he says, the right it would be contradicting our Gemara if he were to hold that moda palganiska knasa is pater. So he says, mikamachom lo kasvu davar zemayolam. Those Rishonim who read this in the Ravid are misreading the Ravid. V'heim tau b'nuschach divreihem. U'masha kosfu hu shechetzi nezek bebezden omrim lo lech lech v'shalem imhoda. So what the Ravid did write is not that moda b'knas is moda b'palganuska is chayiv, but that even if somebody were to be moda b'knas of palganuska, the Bezin should still tell him that he ought to pay. Not that they could be mechayiv him to pay, not that it's hadas valdim kmei eidim dami and there's a chiyuv that's motzi b'dayanim, but omrim lo leich v'shalem. Ela she'ein kofen oso, ma she'ein kein b'shar knaso, she'ein omrim lo shalem klal, v'itafas lo mafkinan minei. So he retains the maskana difference between Palganiska Mamona, Palganiska Knasa and Shar Knasos. It's not as strong as those that other interpretation of the Ravid, which is that in one case there's a Chiyuv Mamon, in one case there isn't. It's just that the Bezin could obligate him, the Bezin could tell him he should pay, and that's sufficient to generate Ikhaf Aslam Avkina Minek. That if the Nizak were to grab the amount, then the Nizak could hold on to it. Mash enkin shar knasos, once you're moda b'knas, even tfisa wouldn't be effective.
Why?
Well?
Why is that not? I mean, you're completely positive.
Right, whereas here it sounds like there's still some basis for chiyuv. Right, so it's getting at the same point that the more radical reading of the Ravid is getting at, but just mitigating the tension with the Gemara and Tesva. Right, so limiting it to like a tfisa and what the Bezin tells me ought to pay, without going in for the full chiluk between chiyuv mamon versus non-chiyuv mamon. Al shar knasos, kol shehoda motziin mimiyado, ach bitafas. Right, for every other knas, you'd be motzi even if you went ahead and was toe-faced, after modiv knas. So far, so good. So that seems to bring out an important difference. That phrase of Hova Karen, who does lean more into the idea that Palganiska is a kind of mamon. Tosos on Tesvava Mebez, really commenting based off the Gemara suggestion. Let me get the Gemara here. Seems so. This it's a machlokas whether this is another distinction between Palganiska and Shar Knasos. So our Gemara says on Tesvav Mebeis. Remember the high kalba de achal shunra. So you have the dog that has a kalba. The dog eats the sheep,
yeah.
Right? And so the Gemara says it's Mishunahu. So it's Palganiska Knasa. Let me read the Gemara very quickly. Samara says in Tesvam Beis, Hasha da Amris Palganiska Knasa, Hai Kalba da Achal Emri Vishuna da Achal Tarnagola Mishunahu, Velo Magvina Bebavel. So if the cat or the dog acts strangely by eating something it usually wouldn't eat, so that's considered Karen. Karen is Palganiska, it's Knas, and Ein Magvina Bebavel. But the Gemara says, V'i Tafas Lo Mafkinan Mine. If the Nizak is toface, we're not going to be motzi from him. And the Gemara, v'yamar kavuli zimna dazlinan la'ara di Yisrael kavinan le. And if Nizak says, I want to adjudicate an Eretz Yisrael where they're still done dine knasos, so we set up a court date for him. V'ilo azil, if the mazak refuses to go, mishamtinan le, we put the mazak in cherem for refusing to go to Eretz Yisrael. U'benkach, mishamtinan le adem esalik hazeg amidrab nasan. And either way, we put the mazak in cherem, even in Bavel, until he gets rid of the davar mazak. But what's important right now for our purposes is that the Gemara says, Yitafas lamafkinan mine. Now, we'll see some Rishonim think that's inconsistent with the general rules for knasos. Because for a general knas, tfisa doesn't work at all. Remember, the Miri is only talking about a case with the Ravid where you're moda b'knas, and then we want to know whether that's sufficient for the Bezdin to issue a psak that you ought to pay, and that's what allows Tfisa to work. In the Gemara itself, it sounds like just Tfisa in general would work for Knossos, regardless of whether you have a Hodah from the Mazik. So Tosus here in Tesvavim Beis writes, V'itafas lo mafkinan mine, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Davka itafas hamazik atzmo, kegon kelev o hashunra, delo mafkinan. Dive mazik hekilu chachamim, sheyucha lahachzik bo, imlocho bishasa hezik. Aval midi achrina, lo, di ibechol davar sheyitvos lo mafkinan, Yavali de takala. The hayomo lamachar yigzal kala sher lo, velo notzi mimenu. The ein anu don in dine knasos, veze yafsid yoser mashe hizik. So those here makes the point that ein don in dine knasos bismanazah, so the bezin can't adjudicate the case at all. Ein don in dine knasos to Babel, bezin can't adjudicate. And so they can't even resolve the dispute about how much the nizak is allowed to take. Because if they were to do a reconciliation of accounts at the end of the day, that would be in violation of Ein Dan and Dinei Knasos Bevavel. Right, so it says that's why we have to limit the kinds of things that the mazak is allowed to seize. Because if he could seize any of the mazak's assets, he may take too much, and we can never force a reconciliation of accounts because that would violate Ein Dan and Dinei Knasos. Oh, why? Because maybe the dog is worth more than the...
It is worth more, isn't it?
Like, unless it just so happens to be exactly the...
Yeah, like, odds are it's not the same. But it's still
yeah.
A cat.
Well?
But it's still a cat.
But that's not the problem. Is that the problem?
Oh. So it's, well, there's some... I was saying, well, there's some cap to the kinds of tisa, but Donnie's saying, who cares? It's still going to violate the Mizak's, the Mazak's rights, because let's say the Mazak has to pay you less, right? Some cases it'll be less, some cases it'll be more.
But isn't he just meaning like a Mazik rights protection thing that like can't possibly allow him to like lose all of his assets? Not that I'd be for like protecting him from like having a case done against him. But I'm not sure that like he doesn't go bankrupt over like having gone
well. You said no to Ramasha Hezek, and that, I don't think it's about completely bankrupting him. I think it's
right.
It's just that
unjust.
Yeah.
Vze yafsid yoser masha hizik.
That seems to be the main concern.
So the question is, if ain't done dine knasos, and as Donnie points out, you can't reconcile the amount of tfisa versus the amount of nezek, then why is he allowed to be toface the kelev in the first place? Right? So what do you think?
Is this like trying? Are you saying it's a deterrence?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think this is like a special, almost a special derivative off the Palganitska Knasa Kadeda Lanatre Lature, where we're saying, absent the idea of Ein Danin Dine Knasa Bebabel, which would mean trying to figure out the amount of the Nezek and exactly how much is palganiska and how much is migufo, etc. So we have a derivative rule, which is as a deterrent for all nizikin and babel, all knasos based nizikin and babel. So the rule is that the nizak can seize the davar hamazik, regardless of whether it's commensurate to the palganiska amount of chule. Because this is the derivative deterrent in the absence of being able to be done dine knasos kebabel. So it's a new rule which is meant to serve as the deterrent in place of the palganiska knasa rule. I think that makes a lot of sense in Tosvos, right? That's why he's not worried about Dani's problem. How do you reconcile the value of the davar hamazik with the value of the actual nezek? Because this is just the rule. Now, in some cases, it sounds like it'd be quite extraordinary, right? I mean, sounds like the davar hamazik might be much more than the value of the nezek. In some cases, it'll be much less. But the rule is, you cause nezek, you run the risk of forfeiting the item. Tosos here seems to suggest that it's limited to bishas ha-nezek, right? Imlokho bishas ha-hezek. It doesn't seem like his dog could harm you on Tuesday, and then you could walk in on Wednesday and seize it.
So according to your idea of deterrence, why would that be?
So you just might say it's still a sufficient deterrent that you run the risk of losing it bishas ha-nezek, without getting in, while still limiting the kind of chaos of these cross-border seizings, cross-border takings. And Mordechai says that explicitly. Mordechai here in the first parak on our segya, he says, quotes Tosa's idea, "Umatzasi davka shetafas akelav ashuner kodem shabo lidei habaylim deim lokeinim hayalim hayatakfo miyado." Right, so the Mordechai explicitly reads into Tosos that the rights of the nizak to seize the asset is only b'shas ha-nezak. Once the mazik recovers it, it's too late. And I think it's implied in Tosos also, where he says, "Sheyuchal la'achzik bo im lakcha b'shas ha-hezak." Does everybody see that?
Does this word fall back your theory about?
Oh, hefker.
Sure.
Is that what you're gonna say? Ah, very good. So, somewhere here, I put in the parentheses, I think this is exactly an excellent raya to that idea that we saw by Hefker, that part of the, maybe one aspect of Tashlumei Nezikin is forfeiting the asset that caused the Neza. And you see that explicitly within this Tosos reading of Paganiska Knasa. Where did I put that? Yes, that's exactly what I... that's exactly a connection that I thought was correct. Okay, where did I write that? I'll find it here later. But yeah, Baruch Shekivanti, I think that's exactly right. I think the Hefker connection is exactly correct. That's what you're saying, right? Yeah, very good. Okay, now the Rush takes issue with Tosos's suggestion. Let's find it. Yeah. So here's the Rush in Perek Aleph Simen Chaf. Quotes Tosos. And he says, "V'lo yecholti lamed al dvarav." I don't understand Tosa's position at all. "The imlakach yoser michtei nizakav, yecholin bezdin ladun, kadei sheyachzer lo hamosar. V'lo mikri dine knasos bebavel, sharei kvar nifra minizko betakanas chachamim, sheamru lo mafkina mine. V'ein anu danin el lahachzer es hamosar. Hilkach nira devechol midi detafas lo mafkina mine. So I understand Tosa's issue that if he were to seize all these assets, we couldn't force him to give back a percentage of them because that would violate Ein Dine Knasos Bebavel. That's not the rule of Ein Danan Dine Knasos Bebavel. The rule of Ein Danan Dine Knasos is that we can't compel the mazik to pay up for the knas. But under the allowance that the special rule that the nizak is allowed to seize it, the bezdin could force him to reconcile accounts without violating in dan dinei knas bebabel. So you see that Tosus and the Rush have a very fundamental machlokas about the scope of the rule of ein dan dinei knas bebabel. According to the Rush, it's limited to the powers of bezdin to seize compensation from the mazik and hand it over to the nizak. But if the nizak does it on its own, then the bezdin could compel a reconciliation of accounts without violating the rule of ein dan dinei knasos, because the bezdin's action is just to reconcile accounts, not to enforce the knas. Whereas Tosos has a much wider view of ein dan dinei knasos, which on his view blocks bezdin from being involved in the enforcement of a knas, even if it just amounts to reconciliation of the accounts. Everybody see that? So it sounds like, according to Tosos, ein dan dinei knasos means that bezdin doesn't have jurisdiction bechlal to weigh in on these considerations of knasos, matters of knas. According to the Rush, it's a much narrower restriction, which means that bezdin can enforce collection from a mazik to a nizak for a knas. So I don't know if anything, does anybody have like maybe a good way of explaining what that machlokas may turn on? It's a little beyond our sugya here. Yeah.
Is that like some sort of lacking of like ability, I guess, in the judge? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's like a little bit slew in front of them. Is it like some sort of lacking ability because they don't have the ability to properly like adjudicate process? Or is it some form of like a more...
What's that, mamon or...
Yeah, something like that.
So they don't have the power to emoti mamon for a knas, but you know, everything else about the knas they could figure out,
yeah.
Right? It's like a lack of expertise or something, or... Yeah, maybe.
Can you say the Rush is not a completely different case at that point, right? It's like you have the Knas case which Bezdin couldn't touch, and now it's almost like a Gzela type of case. He doesn't
right.
say Gzela, but like it's Gzela now, right? Like,
right. They're not done Knas anymore. See, but Tosos doesn't agree with that. Tosos
yeah.
thinks that even the reconciliation of accounts is a part of the Knasos.
Yeah, but I'm being like too convinced by the Rush. Like I'm saying, like that's a very good point. Like that, it sounds like that's just a completely mufka from Knossos. Because like you just look at it and say like.
But how could it be mufka from Knossos if the Bezdin can't really weigh in to assess how much the Knoss is and. Because how much is Gezel is directly...
Once they get into the case, no matter what, they're going to hit.
Right, they have to weigh in on Knas, right.
Okay.
And that's what Liad's saying. So
yeah.
if the problem is that the Bezdin can't weigh in on Knas because they lack the expertise or something, then Tosos seems to be right.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just that they can't compel a collection for a Knas,
yeah.
then it happened already. So it seems to depend on what exactly the problem of ain't done in a Knas Bebavel is. Right? The Muke Yosef seems to disagree with Tosos, especially my reading of Tosos, that that this rule that the Mazik forfeits or runs the risk of forfeiting the Davar Mazik is itself in lieu of paying the Knas because it serves as a deterrent. The Muke Yosef quotes the Rama as holding the following. Because of Rama, v'hu detafas ahu midi de'islei midina le'migva minei be'eretz Yisrael. Tehainu guf shel shor hamazik detam ve'eno mishalim ela migufo. Aval tafas midi de'leslei midina le'migva minei lav tfisahi. So if I
see this, the Muke Yosef citing the Rama, what he's getting at?
That to the extent that Tfisa works in Bavel, it only works on something that you would be entitled to collect Me'ikar Adin. Not on something other than that which you're entitled to collect Me'ikar Adin.
Well, that's not how Tfisa works.
Well?
But that's not how
Tfisa works. Right, especially in Tosos doesn't sound that way at all, right?
I'm saying in general, that's the whole point of Tfisa.
is that it gives you wider rights than you would have under Mekar Adin. So he's saying, look, the Nizah could only collect that which he would have been able to collect in Eretz Yisrael, Mekar Adin. The Islay Medina would have been able to Eretz Yisrael. My whole point in Tosos is that that's not true. Right? It's in lieu of the amount of the Knas, the deterrent functions through the risk of forfeiting the asset. So yeah, that's an important machlokas between Tosos and Mukhe Yosef. So let me make this point a little more forcefully from the following makar. So the Rush in that siman in Perek Aleph Siman Chaf. So quotes the Maharam. This is a very famous machlokas. So he quotes the well. Because he's saying that the rights of the Nizak to collect are limited to that which he could collect Me'ikar Adin. So why are you able to seize the Dabar Hamazik? According to Tosos? He says that's because you have rights based off short time of Shalom Yigufa. Right? And so it seems to go without saying that of course you wouldn't be able to collect more than the value of the nezek. The who detachas hafu midi the islay medina the migra mina beres Yisrael. The haynu guf shel shor hamazek detanu. Veinu mishalim ala migufo. Aval tavas midi the lesa medina the migra mina lav tisei. So it sounds like he's saying that the only reason why you could collect the dabar hamazek is because short time is mishalim migufo. Now I think there's. So, I mean, interesting nafkamina. Does he think the Me'ikar Adin, you could collect it and hold on to the full value if you're only entitled to 75% of the value? Right? So I think Tosus would say yes, for sure. Sounds like the Rama would say no.
Right. But other than the value above the damage, you could just say this the same as Tosus.
Because the short time of Shalom Migufo is Gufo the deterrent.
Right. And
that works especially nice if you hold, like I was saying earlier, the Mishalim Migufo, like that Marshal, or like that Rivid, but the Ketanim case, is part of the Knas. Right, forfeiture of the asset in short time is part of the Knas, and that makes sense why we extended the Dabar Hamazik in general, according to Tosos. Yeah, sorry, I cut you off. I was suggesting in Tosling it's a little wider than Avidin Shinul and Afshe, that it has to do with the deterrent of Palganiska.
You're saying that the deterrent shifts to forfeiture of the asset instead of
right.
I'm saying the principle of it being a deterrent wouldn't change just because of the fact that it's
correct. Correct. But my point is, it seems like in Mukhe Yosef B'Shem the Ramah is trying to limit the what exactly the Niza can take, especially the amount. So the Rashi here quotes the Ram. Well, yeah.
Come back a little bit.
To where?
Is it possible that when the Yuri says Karen, he means Niza?
Interesting. So what do you think, guys? Very nice diak that Isaac has here. Very nice read. Maybe Karen in this passage doesn't mean principle, it means horn, like the av of shore. And so he's saying that since you're a mazik, it's eno domo l'shar knasos. I think that would help my reading.
In the sense that it would then no longer be
a mamon or. Question is, why would Karen be a nice? So if it means principle, it's clear as to what he means, it's clear why Karen would distinguish it from Shar Knossos, because most Knossos are not commensurate to the principal amount. If he means... Right, it's a little more cryptic as to why it being Karen is a reason why it's in a Domino Shar Knossos. Unless he means that it's it has an easy parallel. It has a twin brother that's clear, clearly not a Knoss. Right, so maybe that's reason for thinking this is not a Knoss. Right, so it's like a whole of a Karen who, meaning this, we know this category is B'chal Mamon. But I don't know if that would be sufficiently, I guess, sufficient reason to make the point.
Wouldn't that just support the other read more? Because Karen is stand-in for, like, his case Shor is B'chal Mamon. The whole of a Karen who, so it's not just a Knoss, but it's actually related to, like, the Ikar of Nezet. That's why
we're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has something else that's mamon.
Exactly.
It's a category that generally creates chiyuv mamon.
So since it's part of that category, therefore, of course, it's mamon.
Yeah. It's an interesting read. I mean, let's have to look more at... I wonder if we could... We'd have to check see what the Ravid's Lashon is in the original. I don't think the Ravid has that formulation. The footnotes to the Miri quote the language of the Ravid. I don't remember him having that formulation of Ho of a Karenu. We'll see in this Rush we're about to read, he makes an analogous point. So let's see his formulation. So in this Rush, he writes, quotes the Yadarma, V'arma Levi Kosav, Hada Mina Nitafas Lamafkina Mine, Hainu Davka Kishir Nizke, O Botzer Minizke, Aval Tfe Minizke, Kegon tashlume kefil v'dalad v'hei, itafas lo mafkina, itafas mafkinan mine. So, what's the Adarma's point? Yeah, so he thinks when the Gemara says that Tfisa works, it's limited to the value of the damage. So that's against our reading of Tosos. Right, in Tosos, it seemed conceivable that you could be Tofis Adavar Amazik and just hold on to it. That's why you never get into the question of Ein Don Adina Knas
B'Bavel. It's
not clear if it's the same idea, because here it's about Hahu Midi De Islay Midina L'Migva Minei. And here it's about capping the amount of liability. But notice, here the Rama seems to be saying that suppose you're only chayiv palganizka. So does he think here that tfisa would work up to the full value of the nezek? Sounds like it. Right, the Nizak, even if he's only entitled in Eretz Yisrael to Palga Nizka, it sounds like Tfisa would work up to Nezek Shalem. And the real point he wants to make is that Tfisa just generally won't work. About Tfei Nizke, Kigon Tashlume Keifo Dalad Vehe, Itafas Mafkinan Mine. What's his argument? Delo Ashkechan Damar Rabbanan Gabi Nizak and Ditafas Lomafkinan Mine, Albeman Delo Tafas Tfei Nizke, Kigon Palga Nizka. He says the only makar you find for tfisa working is in a case like ours on Tesvav, where it's for a paganiska case. But tfisa won't work for knasos that are above the value of the nezek. So that's, again, another indication that there's something different about this knas than any other knas. Right? So we saw this already in Meiri's point about motive knas pater versus Chayiv and the Ravid. Here, the Rush citing the Rama is saying there's another distinction in terms of just whether basically does Tfisa work. He's saying that Tfisa will work for a Knas that's like Paganiska Knasa because it's up to or less than the value of the Nezek, but it won't work for a Knas that's above the value of the Nezek. Okay. Right? Why? V'chi avdu le l'nizak takanta bikarna, so here's that phrase, delo lifsin mamone, Aval arvuche midi mamone dachrini lo takinule. So he's saying because the special takana of tfisa is only such that you won't lose money, but it's not there to help you gain money. Now, again, even here within Karna, it's ambiguous whether he thinks this is limited to palga nizka, meaning tfisa would only work up to 50% of the damages, or up to the full value. What's your sense of this phrase? Well, delo lifsid mamone. But even though it's more than the mazik is liable for.
Yeah, well, what's lifsid mamone? Because it could mean like what you're
entitled to. Relative to what you're entitled to, you shouldn't be losing more. Right. Yosri Masha Hizik. The question is, does Masha Hizik mean that he's responsible for, or factually, the amount of losses caused by his property? Right, Tosis. Right, Tosis said,
you said Yosri Masha
Hizik. So, does Hizik mean like his halachic liability for being Mazik, or the losses? Well, right. So now what's interesting here is the Rush takes issue with this point of the Yadarma. So by the way, this is another riot to my father's view that it's right to the extent that the Knas is mamon-esque, then Tfisa works. So Tfisa works up to the Karen amount because that's just compensatory, but not above it because that's something that's already Betoras Knasos, right? Now, the Rosh is upset by this. The Rosh says, V'lo nirali, d'lav takantahi, eladinahu, d'midaraisa mechaivle, elashe'en l'dayin b'bavel she'yichafunu, she'yichufenu, litein lo, b'chol ki'ay gavna, averinash dina l'nafshe. V'lo mafginan mine, ad yoyev kol d'mechuyivle midaraisa. So the Rush disagrees with the Yadarma, and he says, the Yadarma explained the distinction as a takana. Chazal made a special takana to allow a nizak to recover his losses. That's why he could be tofes ad dimei hanezek, and the Rush seems to think that's wrong. And he says, this is not a special takana, it's meikra din deoraisa, that a nizak can recover up to the amount of damages that he's entitled to. So what do you think, just how would you explain the machlokas here between the Rush and the Rama? First of all, what are they arguing about factually? What's like the nafgamina between the views? And conceptually, what's at stake in their machlokas? I think there are two factual nafkaminas. The first is that the Yadarma understands this takana of tfisa as a way of helping out the nizak, that he could recover the value of his damages. So that has the Yadarma's position seems to suggest two things. First of all, it suggests that a nizak can recover nezek shalem even if he's only entitled to palganizka. Second of all, it means he's limited to Nezek Shalem, even if he's entitled to Kefel. See that? So in the Adar Mah, it's all about giving a Nizak a right to recover his losses. So I think this actually seems to fall into the Hagos Hashri way of thinking, Hagos Hashri Radvaz way of thinking, that our primary consideration here is the Nizak's losses. Right? So that's the special takana, even if Maker Adinu can't collect because of Ein Dinin done in Dinei Knas Bebavel, will allow, at least Betoras Tfisa, a Nizak to recover the actual losses. That's, by the way, in direct contrast to the way I was reading Tosfos, where this takana, if anything, is about deterring the mazik from causing damages, so that's why we allow the nizak to seize the dvar hamazik. See that? The Rama thinks it's about compensating the nizak for actual losses, whereas at least my reading of Tosfos suggests that it's about deterring the mazik from causing or allowing his property to cause harm. Now, the Rush disagrees on both those points in the Yad Ramah. It sounds like, A, he would say that if Palga Nizka is caused, then the Niza can only recover up to Palga Nizka. And secondly, he wants to say, if it's a case of Geneva and there's Chiv Kefel, it sounds like the Niza can recover the Kefel amount. Why? Because Ein Dan in Dine Knossos Bebavel, to touch on Liad's point, is just a procedural issue that the Dayanim can't adjudicate the case. But the Chiyuv is created on its own, and that's why the Nizak can go ahead and seize it, bypassing the court system. It's Avedin Yishtinu L'Nafshe, and the Knas exists even though the Bezdin is blocked from actually adjudicating the case. You see that? Yeah. Okay, should we stop here? In the...
I have to go.
Well?
I have to go. You can keep going.
Yeah. So, I think we should probably stop here. Well? Sounds good. But let me just... You see there are two important differences between... At least just... There seems to be two important differences in the Rishonim between this Knas and other Knasos. The first is whether Modeh B'Knas is applicable in the same way here... as it is in regular Knossos. The Ravid thinks it's not. One explanation is, again, because it's more Mammon-esque. My explanation, again, is because it leans more into deterrence. The second nafkamina is whether Tfisa works. I think the more you take Tosos' reading of Tfisa, it has to do with the deterrence-based idea. The more you take the Yad Ramah's idea of Tfisa, it has to do more with the Chov Mamon Shebo, because it's only Karen. The Rush seems to disagree with all of this, because the Rush seems to think that Tfisa would work in general for Knossos. There's no distinction between our Knoss and other Knossos, because he disputes the idea that Ein Dan Dine Knossos means that there's no Chiv Knoss without a decision, without a judgment. He thinks the Chiv Knoss exists objectively, and that's why you're entitled to it mitam Avin Ishtinu L'Nafshe. Okay? So we'll stop here and we'll wrap this up in the next year. Want to do tomorrow? Is that...